Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
General Radahn, the famed Red Lion and Scourge of the Stars, is a ferocious warrior. He fought Melania and her rot to a standstill in the Caelid Wilds to Limgrave's east. And now Caelid has been engulfed by the Scarlet Rot. Even approaching the region is no mean feat. I've heard survivors of Radahn's army are still in the wilds, staving off the rot with fire. And if it's true, I suspect Radahn is still there as well, in Caelid. Though, I doubt he much resembles his former self anymore.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a Red Sky at Night podcaster's delight favorite.
And this week we are venturing into Caelid, specifically doing kind of the north western portion as we go. This area is denser than I expected it to be coming in. There are dungeons here that I had no idea existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's full of chock-a-block.
Yeah,
full of things. This is intro to Caelid 101. Caelid, I'm glad to get here because we're going to Caelid way after a lot of people did. This is the graveyard, mm-hmm. the skeleton graveyard for a lot of people. It was a big meme when Elden Ring came out, like, oh, if you get to the Red Sky Zone, get on out of there.
Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to be there yet.
Yeah, as if the flaming wall was not enough to tell you, go away.
and gigantic T-Rex dog things.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because when I got here, Brayden, also a friend of the show, my friend, mm-hmm. who played Elden Ring, like, cannot handle Caelid, like, hates Caelid.
Okay.
With a passion, like, went and got the beast repellent torch to keep the T-Rex dogs away and all this jazz. Souls Games finds your weakness. I don't hate Caelid. I can generally party in Caelid.
It's one of those things where Caelid is a strange area because its gimmick is the rot, but it is not the only place that has that as its main gimmick. Like, there's the Lake of Rot where we're going to go, yeah. where that particular status effect is like way more in play. I also don't have a lot of trouble here, but I also came here late.
Well, and the Swamp of Aeonia is a small part of it. Like, this yes. is kind of the poison zone, but not really. It's interesting. And that rot stuff, we'll get into that because it's really good that we're here past the spoiler wall because we can't talk about Caelid without talking about what happened to Caelid. We mm-hmm. can't talk about what happened to Caelid without talking about Melania. Mm-hmm. We can't talk about Melania without talking about rot in this game and the weird cosmological implications of rot. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the rare places, not rare in this game, but rare places where like my ears perk up and I start caring about timeline.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like I don't, my brain doesn't work for timeline. It's not that I think timelines are unimportant. It's just, I'm not good.
They've that kind rarely of thing. Factored into the storytelling in Souls.
Yeah. It typically doesn't matter. Like if something is, you know, it's either way in the past, now in the future or way in the future. Mm-hmm. And I'm generally really comfortable rounding.
Yeah.
Doing napkin math on that stuff. Here though, it really matters because, the Scarlet Rot predating all of this stuff, mm-hmm. which is true. You know, yep. the person who came along before Melania imprisoned this outer god that is a status effect in an yep. area we won't get to for a really long time
mm-hmm.
Is weird. It raises a lot of questions about this thing that on the surface seems like a pretty normal conflict.
Right.
You know, it's like normal by Elden Ring standards, like, oh, you know, this this person was this goddess was this Empyrean was born in a certain way, thus had the rot. But mm-hmm. it's more like this person was born in a certain way and was susceptible to this goddess.
Yeah.
That popped in and basically brought down all of the rent in Caelid.
Right. Like, It is remarkable, you know, what we can talk about it. I plan to talk about it when we hit that first overlook at the literal balcony of rot. But like, it's impossible. This looks like the surface of an alien planet. This looks like the place has been terraformed prior to the arrival of some unearthly thing. Yeah.
In Fallout 4.
Yes.
Yeah. It's real interesting. You know, and it's just in terms of areas in Soulsborne games that have been royally fucked, it's really up there. It's like a new Londo level royal fucking, you know,
when the only plant life that can thrive here is the Miranda blossom, you're boned.
Yeah. If the only plant life that can thrive here is angry at you, like the only crops that can grow here are super pissed. Like all we get is piss corn. What did we do last time, Cole?
Previously, we finally met Ronnie the Witch, and we pledged ourselves into her service, going treasure hunting, looking for a forgotten city deep underground that holds a relic that will help Ronnie accomplish her larger cosmological goals. However, our kind of little exploration down the Shifra River well was fruitless. We found a dead end and talked to a jerk who makes sex dolls and learned, oh yeah, you probably need to defeat Radon because he done held the stars in check.
And luckily he's having a party, which we'll get to, which is something I think is cool. But in reading about it, it's funnier than I thought.
Yeah,
like I just this guy being like, listen, we have to throw this party, and I'm like, man, your whole like literal zone is on fire. Like there's roving like rot dragons everywhere. Like this is really your your priority here is to make sure your noble commander gets a noble death.
Kind of
hate nobility in storytelling.
Strange. I hate nobility in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, just we have to make sure that our honorful warrior gets a Viking, a proper send off. Like, man, you know, there's literal just, have you seen these pasts?
Yeah, run.
Run. Like, go live somewhere with buildings.
Yeah.
You weirdo. So we begin in Limgrave, kind of Stormhill in that zone, riding east. There's a huge bridge. On the way here, I know this route very well because I take this route to go kill the big dragon, get a bunch of runes in the beginning of my runs.
You get your also a good at least early on there was a good farming spot out there with the boulders.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
And as you go, similar to, you know, again, FromSoft's trick, the sky begins to change. One of the things I was noticing in firing this up and refreshing my memory is the contrast in how like subtle and well the sky change happens here compared to the filter that immediately goes on, like putting on sunglasses when you go into Blight Town.
Yep.
You know, like they've gotten a lot better at that kind of thing, and technology's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, this is designed really well, I think, because we're not seeing Caelid. Like when we're riding up this road toward these foothills, we're kind of seeing that, like, oh, maybe like we're headed into like a desert kind of area. The ground is like made out of like clay dust, and the vegetation gets a little bit more sparse. We're not going to see what the sky is like and what the land is like until we crest this mountain range that is kind of dividing the continent in two.
This mountain range has a dungeon entrance, but there's nothing we can really do here. It's a one-way door. There are tunnels under a fort on the other side that lead to Limgrave. Here, stymied at the door is Alexander, Iron Fist Alexander, doing the Siegmeier thing, being stuck at a door and needing your help.
He is not despondent again, like Siegmeier. He just he is keeping his mind on his purpose, right? And figures, oh yeah, you're probably headed to that festival I told you about. He had mentioned this before. His dialogue here is where he gives a little bit of insight into what his goal is, which I'm kind of okay with because he's not a human. He's a jar. He's literally a jar that was made to be a warrior. I've never taken a career aptitude test as a living jar. I imagine be the greatest warrior is probably one of the best things that he can hope for.
It's almost all you can do. as a jar. I mean, even, you know, when I say that, there are tons of jars in the village who just loll around on their back and like dance.
Oh, they're living the life.
I would 100% be the Bobby Hill jar if I run these jars. Like, it's full of Bobby Hill jars.
Oh yeah, you would strike out staring. Yeah,
yeah, it's you know, phenomenal. You know, so there's a lot of better paths for a jar, but I also forgive this because it's silly. Mm-hmm. You know, I never like I want to be the greatest warrior as a character motivation. I think that's a little lame. Yep. But here it's cute. And also you can't be mad at Alexander. He's a miracle.
Yeah.
You know, so he wants to do this because he wants to prove himself. Like mm-hmm. he's, you know, he needs a standardized test, right. Basically, to show that he's a warrior.
Little Lisa, with her at home school in case of strike. Yeah.
Exactly.
Is that gum?
You can go back the other way as well. Let him in. If you do this first, he's surprised. Yeah. If you do this without meeting him on this side.
Well, stranger things happen at sea, or so I'm told. He's like, wait a minute, there was a door here before. What magic is this?
Yeah, he's not super bright. It's because his brain is intestines.
He should be eating more sorcerers.
Yeah, he should really be eating more sorcerers. And he doesn't go to Celia and do it.
Nope.
If he had gotten Radahn, he would have. But he mm-hmm. unfortunately fucked it up. On the way there, there's also, we go back up this hill. There's a church on the side, the smoldering church, which is a church on fire.
Mm-hmm.
On loan from the Like a Prayer video. We approach, we're invaded by a recusant. This is Anastasia, the Tarnished Eater. We're going to run into her a few times. Mm-hmm. This is our man-eater, Mildred.
Yeah. Except she is not naked. She is disguised as a finger maiden. She's wearing the finger maiden's robe and whippet. Mm-hmm. She's doing whippets.
Yeah, she's doing whippets. She has a pet whippet.
Yeah. This has popped up ever since Demon Souls. And I'm sure that this is based off of some mech in Armored Core, for answer.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But this is an invasion that happens in every FromSoft game, where a big lady attacks you with a meat cleaver, explicitly a cannibal. This is a woman who is a recusant, you know, so she is working with the Magma Manor.
Volcano Manor.
Yeah. She's working with them to go out and hunt Tarnished for their ends. But for her, there's a perk. She wields this big meat cleaver and eats people. And she's got this nickname. She's Ogress Anastasia.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah.
Girl power.
She can get it.
she can get it. For real, for real. She drops the sacred scorpion charm, which is weird. This is associated with holy assassins. It raises your holy attack power. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of these scorpion charms. The way you get them, only one of them makes sense.
Yeah.
Like you get the magic one from Celebes, mm-hmm. but all the rest of them aren't dropped by people who use those effects. Like there's holiness about with Rikard and mm-hmm. the Volcano Manor. You know, he's blasphemous, like the opposite of holy, but it plays in religion-y spaces is the best I can say. She does not use faith things or holy damage or anything like that. So I don't know exactly why she drops this, unless it's a trophy from a snack.
Could be, you know? It also could be part of her disguise.
Oh, that's maybe true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Across the road from this, we get another sword grave. This is where we find the Lord Godfrey. At the end of his campaign, his golden armies unvanquished and unbowed, yet finds grace lost, tattered and faded.
Yeah.
This is where his campaign stopped.
Mm-hmm. And this is where he started. He started not seeing the light of grace.
Yep. Yeah. Bummer.
Mm-hmm.
The road east. We get this little wall here. Mm-hmm. This is to keep things in.
Yes.
Which we'll find out. They put up these little walls here. You know, it's you can jump over it, and there are ways to get past it. Mm-hmm. It's a message, and it is a pathetic attempt to try to contain something.
Yeah.
You know,
don't rotten open inside.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And as we jump this, the sky starts to turn blood red, and we can proceed toward this little settlement, you know, a couple of ruined buildings called the Shack of the Rotting, mm-hmm. and look out at what the northern part of Caelid looks like. I like how this region changes as you get closer to the Aeonian Swamp. Like mm-hmm. up here, it is more desert-like. But it still, again, looks like the surface of an alien planet.
Yeah, those kind of like growths.
Yeah.
Those, you know, calcium-y like growths start really increasing in density as you get further. This is also where you get to see the fauna of this area, which is fucking wild. Somebody, I read this somewhere, and I apologize for not having credit for it. It's not because I don't want to, I can't remember. But there are these gigantic birds and these big dog dinosaurs, and they share a skull shape in a way that makes it look like one, it's part of the same life cycle.
Yeah, they're like diverging at some point.
Yes, or they turn into one or another. Mm-hmm. Like one turns into the other one at a certain point. They're fucking goofy. It's the triumph of big head mode going on here, where everything just has a gigantic silly skull.
Gigantic silly skull perched atop a long neck over useless forearms.
Yeah.
Or wings in the case of the crow ones. I have absolutely zero idea why these are Muppets who happen to be Tyrannosauruses.
Same thing I saw, and that this was, I mean, I really sincerely apologize, especially if this was a Patreon comment. If you're a patron who wrote this in, say, let us know on the round table. I'm not trying to divest credit. Mm-hmm. Was just that this is, you know, similar to almost like a Chernobyl-y thing. Like, this is the Scarlet Rot ecological preserve, and this is what happens to animal life here.
You know,
like at some point these were maybe normal, but this is a place unlike anywhere else on Earth, you know, where man has taken a backseat and there is this force that is influencing nature, you know, through here. So like these could be anything, you know, that just turned into this weird silly shit. They don't drop items and they don't use weapons. So those are the avenues on which we learn about monsters in this game.
Yeah, that's complicated a bit by the fact that you find them elsewhere, mostly around places that have rot. Specifically, though, I'm thinking of the big bird dinosaurs down in Moog's area, the bloody tumor birds that you end up killing as part of your power leveling if you use that spot. I don't know if that's a result of experimentation, how much Moog's thing has to do with rot. No idea.
Yeah, Moog isn't very rot-pilled as far as I can tell. I think that maybe some of that is Elden Ring.txt.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes things exist in two places and it makes tons of sense. So like way later when we get to the mountaintop of the giants, the kind of primeval trolls there, you know, those make sense. Because they're like the descendants of the giants. Like they're being original trolls there and stuff. Sometimes though, I think that it is an enemy. You know, and there's a bias where I want to think that the game was designed chronologically, when that's totally false. So part of me is like, oh, these are the real ones, because, and this is the real explanation. They were born of this ecological disaster. I have no idea what order things were made.
Right.
It's possible that originally birds were influenced by blood, you know, and the gigantic open wound goddess or whatever. I get the god, you know, whoever Moog's lady is, whose name I'm forgetting, the formless mother. This is formless mother stuff, but I don't know. And then they repurpose them for Kaelin. It could be either order. I do not know.
But it is striking that the only things that seem to be living here, at least on this part, happens to be things that are shaped like this. Either that or, you know, stuff that by all rights should be dead or once died and came back. Once you start going further south toward like the clean ocean, you start seeing like more of the penguins and stuff. It's actually kind of shocking to see that non-hostile fauna there again. But it is there, just in the areas where it's headed. But up here, only giant crows and giant dogs will find purchase.
In my headcanon, those animals in the clean areas just got here. And they're like, oh shit.
just popping by, gonna maybe go and see if we can find some crawfish. Oh god, no.
Time to take a big sip of my coffee and see what's happening in Galen.
I want to talk about the fungus here. This is like, fungus really disturbs me, especially the big just proliferated, I mean, just any of those ones. There's something about the way that the the fungus, especially growing on rocks, the stuff that kind of looks like the tessellated like cups almost.
Yes.
like the white cups. There's something about this area and anything affected by that particular fungus in particular that fires off my mirror neurons, and I get like an intrusive thought of that stuff growing on my skin. You know,
it's the scariest thing there is.
Yeah.
And it's an old trick for from.
Uh-huh.
It's like you mentioned like propagating or cultivating, and that's the thing that's scary about it. It's the same thing, the same kind of trick that From did with crystallization.
Yeah.
You know, in Dark Souls 1 and such. A thing that just kind of grows on its own, like a coral, mm-hmm. You know, is scary.
Yeah.
Like a thing that can spread like that. And it's the thing with crystal is that's how you get like pretty rocks and mm-hmm. engagement rings and stuff. Almost every scary thing about fungus in yep. fiction is real.
Oh, absolutely.
The weirdest fucking like scariest things that we just allow to exist. Like just, all of these things, like, man, I stumbled upon YouTube decided to serve me up a cordyceps
video. Oh, fun. Yeah.
You know? And it's just about like, oh, this ant is alive, but not really. Mm-hmm. You know, it's being driven by a thing. And I was just like, man, like, you know, we live in a world now, like The Last of Us just came out again. People mm-hmm. have done fiction with that. It's an old, scary idea. Imagine being the first person to see that.
Yep.
Like, good fucking Lord.
It's monsters. It's that's the way monsters behave. Yeah.
You know?
No.
Like the puffball fungus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just walking through the woods. Oh, that's a weird rock. And then just like it, you know, get you.
Yep. Oh, like, no, that's in my lungs now. Shit.
It's all the scariest stuff that's ever been. Yeah. And they're just like capitalizing on it, and they're making it look scarier. Like, mm-hmm. I love the calcium kind of growth element of this. Like, it looks a little bit like bone
uh-huh.
here, you know? So like a bone fungus that spreads.
Yeah.
Good Lord. It's so good.
It's incredibly good. And, you know, something that you learn, I just dealt with this because I had to have a tree taken down. Please don't roll your eyes, Gary. But like, I saw,
like, I would roll my eyes if this wasn't the 10th fucking time you've told me about it.
No. God, yeah. Sorry.
No, I know. It's an established thing. Like, yeah. By now I am a nerd to this tree story.
Yeah. for anybody who's hearing it, I'm going to be making it into a broader point. Tree in front of my house. I'm bringing the mail in one day. I see a shelf mushroom growing out of it, like straight out of the Huntsman's Copse, you know, shelf mushroom. Mm-hmm. And I go up and I grab it and it won't break off. And so I twist it and I pull, and the root is basically as long as the trunk was wide. And I was like, okay, that's weird. It's like I pulled a fucking gooey duck out of this tree. So I called out an arborist, and you know, they said, yeah, this tree's going to have to come down. Mushrooms and this kind of stuff only grows on stuff that's dead. Right. Mm-hmm. So the inside of this is dead. You're going to have to bring down the tree, or else the storm will do it, you know, ahead there. I'm bringing that up here because this is a land that had to die for a new life to come in and grow off of it.
Yeah.
This is the product of a clear cut. Yep. And that is what makes this alien. You know, God at some point said, what of a plant but meat too?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then here we are.
It, like, climate-wise and location-wise, this was probably really similar to Limgrave.
Yeah.
At one point, just to, like, set up that contrast. Like, there were woods and mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
It's literally, you know, a clear fall.
It was called the Caelid Wilds, you know? I'm picturing forests. Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible stuff. Like, just really, really good. Really good build-up and really good payoff for this stuff. So what happened here is worth talking about. We know it's in the intro. Mm-hmm. So we know during the Shattering, during the big war, after the Elden Ring was shattered, Radahn and Malenia fought.
Brother and sister
fought here to a standstill, the two mm-hmm. mightiest warriors. In order to win the fight, Malenia bloomed.
Right.
She bloomed in Scarlet Rot. Really cool stuff when we start learning about her. Like, there's this fairy tale quality, like Witcher quality to almost. Like, you mm-hmm. know, she's bloomed twice, and on the third time, she'll become a goddess. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I love this happening in three things. It really took a lot out of her. She had to be taken away by Finlay, mm-hmm. Her Clean Rot Knight, which took her back and fought off all of his soldiers, but it fucked up Radahn as well and fucked up the entire land. Like, this is basically a nuke that hit here.
Yeah, we're gonna see where it went off. That is the very heart of the proliferation of the rot at the core of the Aeonian swamp. But yes, it started there and it spread out. We talk about her blooming. She was born touched by this outer force called the Scarlet Rot, something that was sealed away well below the earth long ago. A god, this cosmic force, just like the Golden Will. She kind of became an unwilling / coincidental emissary for this. And because she was susceptible to it out of that desperation, again, like the frenzied flame coming at times of desperation, she invoked this, but ended up becoming a person of mass destruction.
Yes. Continues to be so. This this had like really far reaching effects. Yeah. And it's really interesting the way that it affected like her story. So her master, the person who taught her to be such a pain in the ass boss, is the person who sealed away the god that was in her beforehand. Like, the god predates her. That's something you don't find out right away. It seems like it happened when she bloomed, and it seemed like it happened because of her fucked up birth with Mikola, who also has who's an eternal baby because of his fucked up birth. The god came in beforehand. This also gave rise to a religion, or reawaken a religion. These pest monsters, again, a lot of people have a big problem with these. I have problems with other things. I'm not bragging, but I've always found these guys really easy. Apparently, the only reason why I bring that up is because they're one of the most hated enemies in Elden
Ring. They annoy me. I think a lot of that is the first impression of being sent over to the Celia Tunnel, where those foremen will wreck you up as you're trying to escape.
Yeah, if you're desperately outleveled, they can one-shot you at something in the ass. But these things are worshippers of the god before she even came around. But they were reawakened by this blooming. The idea of this person being a pathway for a god that had been sealed away to slowly start making inroads back into the world.
Yeah.
And that happened because of the shattering. Like, we talked about it in the last episode of the one before that, we're talking about the kind of theming that plays over all of Elden Ring about everyone, wanting their version of freedom at the cost of others. It's not just the cost of other people's freedom. Like, for Moog to get what Moog wants, nobody else can get what they want. But for Mikella to get into this fight and for the Goddess of Rot to get what she wants, we create monsters.
For Millennia to get into this fight? Or Mikella?
Yeah, or rather for... I'm sorry. I meant for the Goddess of Rot.
Okay,
for Millennia to try to cast off her shackles, to do the shattering, to work and just to be... as a victim of this, we have made not just the Scarlet Rot that destroyed an entire continent, basically, but also created this entire cult of monsters that are everywhere.
Yeah. It left to get what it wants, the Goddess of Rot inside Millennia, and Millennia doesn't like this, is the sense that I get. Yeah, but if that force is to pervade, it will change the earth to better suit itself. And we're seeing its foothold here, a place that everybody warns you off of going for good reason.
Yeah. Everybody in this world wants to be free of the influence of these outer gods. And their struggle to get free is destroying the world. That we're in. That was what I was trying to get at, is like, their push for them to attain liberty is having a huge, huge cost. On all levels of life.
Yeah. Several episodes ago, I called the Lands Between this kind of cosmically colonized space, and we're seeing that, the predominant force has been the Golden Order that has made things to a large degree, how it is. But this is literally just a battlefield. And we're seeing the push and pull between these different forces trying to gain footholds.
More than a colonized space, it is a conflicted zone.
Yes.
It is a contested space
where
active fights are happening between these outer gods. It's It's good shit. Yeah. And it's initially, when I look at it in total, there's a tinge of unsatisfyingness because it, for me, it seems like, and other people had different interpretations of this, but it seems like the same story. You know, a lot of characters are just literally trying to become free mm-hmm. of their yoke. You know, Ronnie and Marika and Melania and all these people who just don't want to be of this thing.
Yeah.
You know, there are characters who embrace it as well, like you got your Moogs and what have you, but they're, yeah. you know, generally are trying to get away from it. But that is the kind of theme that is a universal enough carb, like a simple enough sugar mm-hmm. that when you start looking at the ramifications of it, it becomes really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's not in it. It's not without huge cost. And in one way of looking at this game is a way of showing the cost mm-hmm. of that over the course of 120 hours.
Yes. You know? Yeah. It's a, it is a simple enough riff that there are lots of different variations that you can see on it. Yeah. You know, different people's different relationships and the deals that they feel willing to make are very interesting. I mean, just to now that we're beyond the spoiler wall, Morgott's relationship with the Golden Will is incredibly interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. just as, you know, somebody who is stubbornly holding to it, but, kind of retaining an ill-guided nobility around it, no matter the fact that he is ruling over a basically an empty area. Yeah.
It's all sunk cost stuff. Like yeah. you either decide that it's all bullshit and try to flip the table, or it has to be 1000% holy.
Yes.
You know, it has to be divine and worth everything, mm-hmm. you know, because in order to recognize its value, you have to give up everything. Otherwise mm-hmm. it's cool. It's, yep. it's good stuff. It's the kind of thing that makes me, where I can't help but really disagree. Like, there's a lot of discourse around the story and lore of Elden Ring and it being thematically weaker than previous games in the series. Mm. And I don't think so at all. I think that it's actually really strong in that regard. I think that the messy part is how many times it tells the same story and just its weird flowchart of moving parts with characters with overlapping motivations.
Yeah.
You know, that makes it a little bit hard to follow.
Yeah.
And messy, not just hard to follow. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a detriment that it's dense and it's difficult to get through. It's a detriment mm-hmm. that you can spend a lot of time and a lot of work chewing to get to something that establishes a point that was already established.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it weaker. I would call it more diffuse.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit more diffuse, but it's a 120 hour game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big, big open world game. It makes sense.
Yeah.
For it to be a little bit more diffuse.
Yeah. There's a spirit here at the mm-hmm. at the balcony, just kind of looking out, beholding yeah. the works ye mighty, kind of talking about what we're seeing here. You know, everything is rotting scarlet, you know, telling us about Celia to the south, and it's apocalyptic, you know, just yeah. the says the end is nigh for us all, you know, sitting here looking out over a world or at least a country that has ended.
Several different places we can head to from here. We head out. If we go north, we get to a minor Erd tree. And it is even affecting the Erd tree.
Yes.
You know, there are the tender of the Erd tree is undead. There are these rotting wooden tumors mm-hmm. on the back of the Erd tree tenders. Mm-hmm. It's abnormal growths. They spew poison, you know, not scarlet rot, but poison.
Yep.
And the Erd tree avatar itself is a putrid avatar.
Yeah.
It has been corrupted by this rot as well. Has the same moveset, but inflicts scarlet rot. I'm sure we talked about this, but it's basically toxin, you know, toxic, yes. really yeah. fast poison.
Very fast poison. You know, previously toxic, previously plague in Demon Souls. Yep. Just a bigger emergency, though not unheal throughable, let's say.
Did you know there's a third poison in Elden Ring? There's strong poison, which is different.
Huh.
It's a poison you can get. Only a couple of items cause it, and it does less less overall damage, but does it faster over a shorter amount of time.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a neat thing strategically, because like you don't want to wait for an enemy to tick down with poison.
Right.
You know, and Scarlet Rot would be the best of both worlds, but you can get a thing where you get all of your poison damage much faster.
Yeah.
It's called strong poison.
Huh. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's not like a capital, you know, it's not a proper noun. It mm-hmm. just says strong poison as opposed to poison. And then like I was looking into it and saw there's a mechanical difference.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah. Anywho.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, when this guy does his butt stomp, he just sprays out a bunch of this rot. The liquid is fucking vile looking. It is a red brown, but there is just enough of a yellow tinge to it that it feels like pus.
Yeah, there's some bile in there. It's like when Jessica deploys her stink sacks and expresses her anal glands.
You mean your cat?
Yeah. Jessica the cat.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while she'll express her anal glands when she's happy. And I imagine it basically being like the putrid avatar. Being a squat cobbler. On the way here too, just as a real quick note, I didn't mention this. We get another one of those caravans of like wandering zombie.
Similar to
the lake. And I was like, oh, when, you know, this was me as a baby Elden Ring player. I saw mm-hmm. them and thought, what if I followed them? Like, do they go to that lake? You know, is this a proper procession?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, they walk far enough and then they kind of mill around.
Yeah, they kind of hang out. Like, it's very funny. But yeah, I love anytime you run into one of those like huge caravans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of dudes is great.
Just the parade of the dead, like literally marching kind of in formation, but just ending, you know, standing still, and you just hear all of them just kind of muttering, asking, "So, you doing anything after?"
Yeah,
I don't know. Where's the party going?
Yeah, I don't know. I got work tomorrow. Yeah. This is what happened to the people here.
Yeah,
this is when we're up in that lake or cabin of the rotting, shack of the rotting. These guys will show up as well.
Yeah.
This is the rank and file.
Mm-hmm. There's a catacomb at the base of the minor Erd tree here. It's mm-hmm. in the cliff. It is overtaken by both rot and the death root. So we're going to get some skeletons that revive the normal skeleton wave for Elden Ring. We're going to have some slimes. Slimes that will do the usual Dark Souls thing of dropping on you from ambush. These pools of blood red liquid that'll give you plague.
Yes. We can find these before this, but this is an area that is dense with Aeonium mm-hmm. butterflies.
Yes.
It's a crafting material, but it's kind of neat because these were born in the swamp of Aeonia, and they're said to be once the wings of the goddess of rot herself.
Yes.
Later when we fight Malenia, she does mm-hmm. have wings made of butterflies.
She does have butterfly wings, like the bullet that Smashing Pumpkins sang about.
Like that titular bullet, you know?
Yeah.
The world is a Loch Ness monster.
I love her wings. That is such a good image. Like just as they, as the living butterflies slough off and then just become, like curl up and brown as they fall. Good shit.
Yeah. It looks really, really good. Because gamers are gross, everybody got super horny for her because she's naked in that phase. So there's tons of like sexy images of the naked rot goddess. And I'm like, man, you just stick a tongue, a penis, finger in there. It's just immediately going to fall off. What's your end game, perverts? Just like, I don't, you know, there's nothing, you can't do anything. I guess if you're it is like the goddess of sapiosexuals. Like if you just want to like get sexual gratification from having a discussion with Malenia, you know, and maybe looking at her, then sure.
But what if you want Mommy Malenia to step on your neck?
Stepping on your neck is a, like, I reluctantly get that, but I want somebody to like give a flesh eating bacteria rotting disease to my genitals is a bridge too far for me.
Okay. Well, you know, I guess you were born in a different time. Okay.
Yeah. I guess I just show my old man cover. I'm just like, man, I cannot wait to have my balls drop off like raisins.
just like a skin tag that you put one of those rubber bands around.
I want a wasp to impregnate my ball like a fig and have it fall off. That's what sex with Malenia would be like. You know, but she's naked, so you gotta, man, can't help it.
That's contractual.
Did you see the viral post that's going around about the guy who wrote like this sad story about how sad he was that he finally beat Dancer of the Boreal Valley because he just kept fighting and dying to her on purpose so he could spank her? It's just fucking nuts, man. It's
like, I don't care for that.
Yeah, I just, you know. Folks. I'm fine with being the prudes of games, if that is the alternative.
There's got to be a medium.
There's none. Aeonia is the swamp.
Yes.
Where she first bloomed. We're going to go there later.
Yeah.
This is where they battled. The Scarlet Aeonia is the name of her bloom that she does, and she has three of them. She will totally become goddess build.
Yes. Yeah. So both of the apparent paths here in this catacomb are dead ends. One of them does contain the boss lever, but there is not really a place you can walk to use it. This is the elevator trick. You've got to send the elevator up and then fall down the shaft to get to the lower levels of this place. There is the Imped Wolf helmet down here that you just find on one of the caskets, which is pretty nice. Raises your endurance. Love those for situational kind of uses. And the boss here, I'm going to say some of the bosses, some of the boss encounters in these minor dungeons in Caelid, a little uninspired. We've got the two burial watchdogs here, one with a scepter and one with a sword.
What if there are two? It, you know, the idea of fighting, having one that does more range stuff with a scepter, you know, is able to do more distant magic covering the other one is fine. You know, I get that as a boss idea, and I still love the design of these things, but it is not particularly inspired. You get the Mad Pumpkin Summon Ashes here, which I thought would be very useful, but the fact that they cannot see applies even when they're on your side. It's really tanky, but it does not know where things are coming or going. You know, so it's not that useful.
Just the only neat thing here is its description. You know, talks about it being a mad soldier that is all that is left of a broken gladiator. So we know
even
the story.
That stuff we knew.
Yeah.
We knew from the helmet. If we go east of the shack, there is a road, that is, you know, getting kind of rotten, going down the cliff, circling back to these ruins that are underneath, the shack, finding all these zombies. We can get a, one of those invisible beetle guys here, you know, that's going on the little trail. Here we can get the spell Whirl O Flame incantation. Nice. This is you know, kind of useful from like a lore perspective here, again learning about the fire worshipers that we have here. You know, and it's I like how the description of this backs up how the incantations are named and stuff. Like the fire beguiles those who gaze into it, and so the guardians of the flame are also its worshipers, and all of the flame things are like, whoa, flame, you know. All the incantations are like, oh, flame, man. You know,
hey guys, get a load of this flame.
They're all called stuff like that, so it ends up making sense, like the ecclesiastical, you know, like worship, like charismatic religion, worship of the flame.
The invocations. Watch out. Kind of past this caravan, kind of get into some of our first encounters with these huge dog beasts that look kind of like dinosaurs. One-on-one, they just, you know, it's kind of like fighting a big enemy. You just want to make sure that you're not standing right in front of it when it attacks. There are pack dynamics in some of these. They're not often placed close enough for this to happen, but the ones with the red eyes will howl to bring more in. And that is usually my cue to tauren up and dash away.
I don't like fighting multiple ones at a time.
No.
But one-on-one, they're surprisingly not tanky for an enemy that's this big. I love the little story here. Like there's a caravan, one of those treasure caskets here that's been attacked by these things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Typically, you know, my understanding of these things was they came from Limgrave. You know, maybe at one point Limgrave was sending war support, you maybe know, during the Shattering.
This one is headed out. This one's headed out. It's headed up the up the road away to Limgrave. Yeah.
Maybe it's on its way back. Yeah, I don't know. Because if it would, I don't know what now would send something. Like the genesis of this had to be before this became a crawling wasteland of dog ruxes.
Yeah.
You know, because who would be left to send it? You know, so I don't, but the idea, you know, finding one of these, I love that you can hijack these caravans and you can find them pre-hijacked all the time.
Yeah, just completely wrecked. This one has the greatsword in it. You know, situational. You want this if you're doing guts builds, but that's about it.
There's a much better greatsword, is my understanding.
Yes,
Than this one. when you get all the way to these ruins down here, this is where the giant crows show up. They're roosting in these trees. They will drop down and attack you. These guys are also a huge pain.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to fight more than one at once.
Yeah. Distinct from the dog ones, these ones are in settle down Beavis mode. They're yes. very jittery.
Fastbacks.
Yeah.
There's nothing really up top, but if you use a stone sword key, you can get down into the basement, and this is where you can get the Sword of Saint Trina. This just recently got buffed mechanically. Cool. Like, this used to not be particularly strong, mm-hmm. but my understanding is that, like, sleep is a little bit more viable.
Yeah. It scales with Int, so it's a good alternative to Moonveil if you're trying to not be dependent on that with that same stat loadout.
Yeah. This is the sleep sword.
Mm-hmm.
Saint Trina is the sleepy.
Yeah. Makes a little it nebulizes some sequel as its attack. And there's some weird situational uses for sleep in this. More so than just crowd control.
I generally it's absolutely wonderful for godskin stuff because they go to mm-hmm. sleep really quick, but I just use the pots for it. I can't imagine using the swords.
Right.
It's what's really interesting about this is that status effects in FromSoft games avoid the status effect problem a lot of the time mm-hmm. because the enemies are properly tuned for it. I find not so with sleep, where like it's not worth putting an enemy to sleep unless it's a boss, because I'd rather just kill them.
Yes.
You know, taking the damage hit that you do for the status effect is not worth it, because the enemy will die soon enough with a higher damage enemy, which is the same reason why status effects suck in Final Fantasies.
Yes.
You know, and typically. So good for bosses, but apparently it's better now in general. I think what they did was they buffed it as just a weapon. Like, it's still not going to be that useful just to put a knight to sleep, because one more hit will kill them. Mm-hmm. But it's actually a good weapon as well.
Yeah. This is the first time that we've talked about Saint Trina after the spoiler wall. We get a description here, which we can also get parts of off of Saint Trina's Lily. Saint Trina is an enigmatic figure. Some say she is a comely young girl. Others are sure that he is a boy. The only certainty is that their appearance was as sudden as their disappearance. This is believed. I don't know if this has been refuted or if other people have come up with a better idea. It's believed that this is Mikola.
There's cut content and things that suggested this, that it was Mikola. So there was going to be more to it. We don't know if that's going to come in DLC,
mm-hmm.
but it's not that there is. I mean, there's circumstantial evidence, like there's Trina's lilies mm-hmm. and Mikola's lily mm-hmm. near the Hallig Tree. Yep. There's not stuff in the game to show that this is Mikola. It's there was stuff like dialogue and things that implied it.
Yeah. But Mikola inheriting kind of this sexual dimorphism. I don't know if that's the right word, but kind of a fluidity between these different identities that physically can manifest, you know, that seems to be, you know, that seems to track, especially with how, you know, special Mikola seems to be in this world, you know, most taking after America. And I forget what I was going to say in addition to that. You talk.
We'll find out more whether they're going to continue this idea, like relatively soonish, as you know, the DLC will become announced. And like,
I don't know if From has any presence at TGS. That would be my guess. You know, as we're recording this here on September 1st, no clue. Oh, I knew what I was going to say. Description of appearing as suddenly as you disappear, that same thing has been said in the lore about Radagon on different items as well. The mysterious appearance and disappearance, specifically of Merica and Radagon, in different places.
Yeah, because they're swapping moods, you know. So you can go to the other side of the Gale Tunnel here if we want to let Alexander through, which we do because he's a bro. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting dungeon because this is not just a dungeon. It's a mine and a jail. Like,
no, this you're thinking of the jail cave south of the castle. This is its own thing.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, that's coming up later. But it's real weird that they're underground prisons.
Yep.
Here, this is not that different than this is a mine with Radahn's Lord Sworn. So these are foremen, you know, who are in his army who have not been corrupted by this Scarlet Rot.
Yeah.
Like, you get the sense that the rank and file people got turned into these zombies. The soldiers who got to shelter in the castle or shelter underground, you know, are privileged enough to maintain their human form here.
Yeah, I just, the way that I read it was they just happened to be lucky enough to be underground when the flash happened.
Yeah. There are ones that are above ground as well. But it's possible that there was a release. Like, it might be a flash thing. It might be that there was the initial release, you know, it caused a background radiation of Scarlet Rot, and this is the settled down version of it. It's hard to tell whether it was a slow creeping thing or a big boom.
Yeah. But this tunnel is relatively untouched by the rot. We're not really seeing a lot of that here. We drop down this one-way shaft, which is weird. How's Alexander going to get up that bad boy? You know, he's got strong arms.
Yeah. We're going to carry him.
Yeah. And the miners, they've got their fire red pickaxes here. But that doesn't make that big of a difference with combat. What does is they've got themselves an octopus infestation.
Yeah. There are some giant octopuses down here. Not sure why. Again, giant octopuses show up around here. You can find the cross Nagatana or Naginata here, which is going to be useful.
Naginata. Yeah.
Useful. And then the boss here that you get through near the entrance to let Alexander in is the magma worm. Like, this is what kind of happens when you go Dragon Communion, try to become more and more dragon-like, and take it too far and suck. You become these kind of pathetic guys.
Yeah, you know? you're taking this communion as, you know, part of a promise from these draconic forces that are offering you power, but you will never be a true dragon on the other side of this. You instead, you know, kind of become this like half thing. Like, these are, you know, relatively humanoid. Like, they still use swords and stuff. But they've got this stony skin. They don't really have functional wings to speak of. And you almost always encounter them underground. I think there's one that's kind of, you know,
there's one above ground over by Volcano Manor by Alexander.
Yeah. I like these fights. This is an interesting boss, particularly because it's like a melee focused Quelaag. Because it's got those combos with its sword and does these charges, but it's kind of constantly off gassing these magma pools, putting down area denial, kind of hemming you in because that magma sticks around.
Mechanically, I think it's very important that it's not quite area denial. If this lava was Quelaag lava that hurt as much as lava did in previous games, I would think this fight sucked. The fact that lava is not that big a deal anymore, weirdly enough, in Elden Ring is what makes these guys okay. You know, if lava killed you as fast as it did in the Demon's Ruins,
I would basically
hate this, because you don't know, there's not like it just kind of slawing off these magma pools. It's not like it does a move and then creates an area you can predict. It's more like you're on the side, your camera's absolutely full of this guy's torso, and then all of a sudden you're standing in magma.
Yeah.
If that were basically a death sentence, then I would think this is a really badly designed boss fight.
Yeah, just kind of passively squirting. Yeah,
just nonstop, just, you know, big red and all over.
This discharge is ceaseless.
You mean to tell me a ceaseless discharge is? Some of these guys, we find out who they are. We don't know who this guy is other than that, you know, before he turned into this monster, other than that he got a cool sword.
Got a very overpowered sword that is a crutch that I admit to using.
This has been, I'm pretty sure, nerfed, but it was a big PvP thing along with Rivers of Blood. This is the Moonveil sword.
Maybe it was nerfed a little. Like, people still, when a patch note comes out, they will say the Moonveil remains untouched. They've been very hesitant, it seems, to actually like meaningfully change this.
It's interesting how it. Yeah, like what they will do for these things, because there'll be like patches or nerfs that will only really matter in very edge cases. Mm-hmm. Like they'll be like, you know, changed animation speed, and you don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really trying to fine tune it. Yeah. I imagine that we're not done with this being adjusted.
Yeah. No.
I had my eyes on the prize on using the Moonlight Greatsword on my intelligence build thing, so I never use this.
Yeah.
But my understanding is it's quite powerful.
It's very powerful. Specifically because of its special moves. So you press R2 to sheath it. And then if you press R1, you do a horizontal slash that has a short range, but kind of moves upward as it goes, creates like an arc. Mm-hmm. And if you do a strong attack from that sheath position, you will do a very long range vertical slash will pass through several different enemies. It's very good for crowd control will do a ton of damage, and relying on it too much will make other weapons make you wonder what's the point of them, because this one is too good.
It's interesting. I wonder if there's any truth to the idea that like you choose an OP early weapon in this. Mm-hmm. And I am just, I have a pathetic little part of me that's like a sort of Knight in Flame guy, just because I happen to go get that one first.
Yep.
I'm like, that's my legendary sword. I also, I tend to prefer a straight sword moveset in this game to a katana one. Like I like the Uchi Katana and used it for a while on my first build, but I like the katana is not my favorite moveset of this. It's cool that you can get a good sword here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice that you can unlock the way for your buddy.
Yeah. Open it up for him. We can leave here and return to the main highway, head a little bit south, and our last destination for this episode is the Kalem Ruins. This is a town that got et up in the war, and it's one of the more grisly sites because this is where they're burning bodies.
Still, you know, trying in vain to stop the spread.
Yes,
of this contagion. You know, the bodies will get up, however, you know, because they're not, you know, they're zombies and being burned doesn't bother them that much. Walk toward you, puff up and explode.
Yeah.
At you, which are not, you know, you want to kill them beforehand. Not too big of a deal, but a fun little surprise.
Yeah.
They're flaming chariots here. This is, you know, we know these guys, those weird big giant faces. Mm-hmm. And stuff. This is one of the zones you can do drop attacks on them if you know about that trick. There's also a lot of cover here. I don't like fighting them in wide open areas. I do like fighting them in more complicated semi-indoor areas.
I can never reliably do the drop attack, but if you get them in a winding area and get them stuck on a turn, that is the best way to get around and stab the little Wizard of Oz back there.
The basement, you know, we talk about uninspired bosses. This is the Pumpkinheads duo, so it's two Pumpkinheads, as opposed to one. It's interesting. I wonder if because you've got in the notes that this was a tough boss, I wonder if you played it before the aggro patch for multiple enemies thing that happened that made like when you're fighting a double boss, one of them hang back more.
Maybe. I don't know. So when I say this gave me trouble, not on the most recent one, because I'm way over leveled for it. I just, in my memory, I remember just banging my head up against this, kind of like the Pumpkinhead banging its helmet against the floor. That's probably very much the case, because I would have gotten here before any aggression patch went through.
Yeah. I haven't been back here on an appropriately leveled character since then. So I imagine it's easier, but I don't know.
Yeah,
for sure. I know that patch applied to the Godskin duo, but I don't know everything it applied to and how its effects were.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to replay the entire game from scratch. You know, just throw it. There's a patch. Throw in another 120 hours on the fire.
Yeah.
You know?
Why not?
Yeah.
So when I was looking this up, trying to find other stuff about the Pumpkinheads, I saw this and saw video proof of it. So I'm happy to, you know, to say here, did you know if you put the Pumpkinhead to sleep, it'll wake up and not know who to attack?
I did not, because I've never put them to sleep.
You can put them asleep and they'll attack their allies. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. There's also those, crystal dart things that you can use to make golem enemies join your side. That's really interesting too. And I never did that in my first playthrough.
Right.
There's just like a lot of like little gameplay tricks like that, that are real cool that are better cataloged. Like sometimes I think that people will be a little not cranky, but they'll be like, oh, you didn't mention this, and it'll be a little gameplay trick like that. Like some of that stuff we just don't know, and some of it's hard to talk about in this format.
Yeah.
You know, real that feels like a YouTube format thing to me.
Yeah. Just it's a discoverability problem.
It's not even, to me, it's not even a problem. Like it's a delight.
Oh yeah,
it's
oh,
a
yeah.
discoverability treat. You know that, like, you can be like, oh man, this works, that's cool.
Yeah,
you know what, neat thing. I don't remember having a problem with these guys, but I'm sure since it was a duo fight I summoned, Lutel the headless probably basically, you know, carried,
helped you house one of them.
Yeah, exactly, house one of these dudes.
Mm-hmm. The reward on this is the visage shield. This is the made to look like fire giants. It's of a piece with those flaming chariots, the siege engine things. It's got a little gimmick. Its power makes it spew some flames out of its many tongues sticking out of there. I love that this is the sarcasm kind of, or just a dry wit coming off of the description on this, you know, is talking about like, oh, we made these so that people would be afraid of fire. You know, just it's made to aid in the worship, which, you know, involves being afraid of the fire. And it ends on this fun line. In other words, the shield has an instructional function.
Yeah, very cute. The it's too heavy.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing a build where you can lift this fucker thing. It's like 24. Pounds or what a YouTuber I like just calls that, since that unit is not specified, just calls them Miyazakis.
Oh, fun.
It's 24 Miyazakis. You cannot pick up that many Miyazakis.
No, it's a 44 strength requirement. Wild.
Yeah, heavy and strong you must be for this thing. I'm sure it's cool. You know, it'd be fun to do that build. But again, how many playthroughs of Eldering I got in me?
I don't know.
EC's Ruins of the Dragon Burrow, we're going to talk about them in a while. You know, first, though, we're going to go south.
Yes.
There is another wall here that kind of cuts the continent in half. This is where we're going to leave it for this episode, but we are going to head to southern Caelid.
Yes.
After this.
Yes, we are. We're going to go after Fort Gale. We're going to go to the Gale Tunnels and the Gale Jail. So
exactly.
Get ready to be confused.
Yep. It's all, Major Tom from here on out.
Thank you so much. If you're listening to this, you have already helped us. Thank you for your support. Consider going and leaving a rating or review in iTunes. There are still those free episodes from the first run of the show that helps people find out about us. That is that is a free thing you can do. We'd appreciate it.
There are tons of those.
Yes.
Like the first run of the show is still the bulk of the show.
125 episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. So go check them out. We'll be coming up we still got some episodes, but we'll be coming up on our roundtable relatively soon, so keep an eye out for that, for your responses. If there's something that you have said, if there's like a lore supposition or something that you have a different theory, it's a great place to air those. That's what it's for.
Yes.
You know, we're not trying to say that our version of the truth of this game by embracing the ambiguity. We're being sincere in that. Like, our version of the truth of this does not mean that's the only version of it.
Right.
Tell us what you think. That is the point. That is what we want. You know, we may not agree with you, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You know, it's we want to know what you have to say. So that, keep an eye out for that.
Do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, though, just come back next week.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate it. Until next time, what should they do, Cole?
I would say, just if you got any damp, if you got anything damp around, dry it out. Otherwise, that fungus is going to get in. It's going to be a real problem. Got to control your moisture issues.
Yeah.
Umbasa.
Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.